D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Derek Mason and Adam Vingan here with you today. So, Derek, a former member of the Tennessee Titans, is in the news, and not for the right reasons. The NFL has suspended Houston Texans linebacker, former Tennessee Titans linebacker, Azeez Al-Shaair, for 3 games for repeated violations of player safety rules after his hit to the head of Trevor Lawrence on Sunday. I don't know if there has been any ruling on Trevor Lawrence because, by the way, the Titans do play the Jaguars this week. So I guess we should expect Mac Jones for the Jaguars against the Titans. We'll see. But Al-Shaair was ejected in the second quarter of Houston's win against Jacksonville on Sunday. And Trevor Lawrence suffered a concussion on the play. So this is not the first issue, trouble with the law, so to speak, the NFL law, I should say, that Al-Shaair has had this season. It happened just a couple of weeks ago with the Titans. Al-Shaair was flagged and fined more than $11,000 for a late hit out of bounds on Tony Pollard. He also was fined roughly $12,000 earlier this year after he punched Bears running back Rashawn Johnson on the sideline in week two. According to ESPN, that occurred during a scuffle that started after Al-Shaair's hard shot on Caleb Williams near the sideline. And that play, by the way, according to ESPN, was not flagged. So David has the clip of Texans general manager Nick Caserio addressing. We'll hear from Nick Caserio first, and then I want to share with you, Derek, and you. I know you've already seen it, the letter from the league that they gave to Azeez Al-Shaair after suspending him for 3 games, but this was Texans GM Nick Caserio.
When you go back, let's look at this season. Okay, we had multiple situations, multiple examples. All right, two really good players, I would say. Branch ejected against Green Bay, right? Plays the next week against us. Okay, Derwin ejected. All right, got suspended for 1 game. And Derwin's a great player, and Derwin's had some other situations that have come up. And I'd say even going back here, a player that we know well organizationally here, Kareem Jackson. Kareem's a good player. Was ejected, fined, and then suspended after 3 games. So we're going to say Azeez Al-Shaair, who nobody embodies our program more than Azeez, what he's about, what he's been through. You all know his story. There's not a more selfless individual, more about the team, who's earned the respects that represents everything that we want this program to be about. I mean, this morning he was at a United Way event. So we're talking about some of the commentary that has been made about his character, about the person that he is, about what his intentions are, from people that, quite frankly, don't know anything about Azeez Al-Shaair, okay? And if for the league to make some of the commentary that he made about lack of sportsmanship, lack of coachability, lack of paying attention to the rules, quite frankly, it's embarrassing.
That was Texans general manager Nick Caserio defending his player Azeez Al-Shaair. And he referenced a letter that John Runyon, who now works for the NFL, former player, now works for the NFL, that I believe he gave Al-Shaair after giving him the suspension. Quote, "Your lack of sportsmanship and respect for the game of football and on all those who play, coach, and enjoy watching it is troubling and does not reflect the core values of the NFL. Your continued disregard for NFL playing rules puts the health and safety of both you and your opponents in jeopardy and will not be tolerated." What did you make of that particular passage from John Runyon in explaining his the suspension to Azeez Al-Shaair?
When you start to try to legislate someone's intent or start to legislate, you know, how a person's thinking or whatnot, I think you're getting into murky waters. Has Azeez had personal fouls before? Yes, he has. Has he been suspended before? No, he hasn't. Nick Caserio did go down a line of guys that he knows that have been either fined or suspended. And he went down the list like this guy was fined. This guy, you know, end up getting ejected. This guy was fined again, ejected. This guy was fined again. Then this guy gets, you know, sentenced to one game. He has to miss one game. But it never got to a point, it never escalated to a point where that guy went from not ever being suspended to three games. That's the hypocrisy of it all, is that you go, and again, did he deserve to be suspended? More than likely, yeah, for a game, just suspended for a game. But to go directly to three games, I think that is hypocritical, because other guys, and you're talking about a guy that has never been suspended in his career. Now, has he been fined? Absolutely, he's been fined. And I'm not going to try to sit here and justify that.
Just this season, he's been fined twice.
Yes. So typically, you'll get fined a few times, but they don't go automatically to three games. They usually, a game, you get suspended, game check, and then you move on. And then the next goes to 2 to 3 games. But they don't just automatically, at least not to my knowledge, automatically go to 3 games. Hell, they allow Burfict to do all that crap that he did.
We did have a texter on our text line that said that Azeez Al-Shaair is the new Vontaze Burfict.
No, he's nowhere near Vontaze Burfict. But Vontaze Burfict, it got to a point where he was doing it. You just felt, I think he was doing it deliberately. Like, he
Perfect
was just
was?
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
He was just like,
he
the
was
hell
reckless.
With it.
He
exactly.
was reckless.
He was completely reckless. And I think even some of his teammates realized he was reckless. I think in this situation, a one-game suspension would have been good enough. But if you read the beginning of that letter, and this is why I think they suspended him for 3 games instead of one, which is completely wrong again for suspending him for 3 games. John Runyon put in that letter, you removed your helmet after you had already been disqualified and started going back at the other guys. He was arguing. But John, of all people, and the other guys on that panel, they should know in that situation, a heated situation, just because I take off my helmet and I'm fussing back and forth, if I don't then engage with that guy, then okay. It was just a bunch of talking, a bunch of yapping. Yeah, you took your helmet off, but ultimately you walked off the field. Yeah, it may have taken you a minute, but you left. You didn't then engage in more fighting or more pushing. I wonder how many games the guys got, or how much they were fined for the guys that actually initiated it all. Because Dominique Foxworth, who I played with in Baltimore, said something that it was completely spot on in regards to the league in this situation. Don't try to normalize bad things. Yes, Azeez did what he did. Yes, as a player, you go in there and you protect your guy. But that's not the right thing. Don't try to make that like that's the right thing to do. Like, yeah, you protected your player, but also you need to be fined too, because what Azeez did caused for him to be suspended. But then the initial, the stuff after that should have been on both guys, more so the other guys. Because they could have been mad and upset. They could have just been japping and talking to him. Or you could have pushed them once. And it could have been over with. Everybody could have dispersed. But then the sideline got into it. And then it became this melee. Yes, I understand it started with Azeez. But that doesn't mean we're going to excuse the bad that the other guys did as well. Let's not lose sight of that. Again, suspend Azeez for a game, but to automatically go to 3 games, which he will appeal, which I'm sure they'll get it down to 1 or 2.
He is appealing the
decision.
Yeah,
he will appeal, and they'll get down to 1, I'm pretty sure. But to automatically go to 3 games, and I think your reasoning, I believe he did it because Azeez took off his helmet. I think that's why, because if you just base it upon the hit, it's a 1-game suspension and a fine.
So in the NHL, they have a Department of Player Safety that doles out supplemental discipline in the forms of fines or suspensions. And one thing that they point out when they're determining the level of discipline, they look at whether the player that was on the other side of the play suffered an injury. Mm-hmm. Did he have to leave the game? Did he come back? Did he stay in the game? That's something they take into account. Trevor Lawrence left the game, suffered a concussion, and it does say, according to ESPN, that the Jaguars have not made a decision about the quarterback. Doug Peterson said Monday that the team would wait until Lawrence clears the concussion protocol before deciding whether to shut him down for the remainder of the season. He also said they would take Lawrence's sprained left AC joint into consideration, although he added that the earlier injury did not get aggravated by Al-Shaair's hit. So perhaps, again, we'll see Mac Jones against the Titans. But another thing they do, I'll have to look up the exact language. Mm-hmm. One thing that they do, Derek, in the NHL is they have repeat offender status. Yes. And I think it's less about like the accumulation mm-hmm. of, well, this person's been suspended three times. Mm-hmm. I think it's over the course of a certain period of time. So let's say a player in the NHL, and if I'm wrong about this, I will correct myself later. Let's say a player in the NHL has been suspended four times, but three of those suspensions came within this outside of the statute of limitations, so to speak. They're not considered a repeat offender because maybe there was a year or two in between the suspensions. Mm-hmm. But I just think the accumulation of the fact that he had just been fined for a late hit against Tony Pollard. Mm-hmm. He was fined for punching an opponent earlier in the season. Mm-hmm. I wonder if the NFL just said, clearly, this guy isn't getting the message.
So you suspend him a game. So you suspend him a game.
I mean, I can understand your point about like going from fine, Nick Caserio's point as well, going fine to three games. I might agree with you that is a little harsh. Mm-hmm. Maybe it should have been one, maybe two. But I'm curious. I mean, you know, maybe it's – and look, it happened against a quarterback, mm-hmm. right? I mean, if it happens against a less – you know, a quote-unquote lesser position, maybe it doesn't have the same effect.
But now what they're doing is – and I see it playing on ESPN. Now they're going – they're basically going through his whole career, and they're picking out instances where – you know, they slow-mo it and they show him, you know, hitting a guy high or this and that. It's like, seriously, this is how we're going to do it now. You know, my thing is that had he been suspended before a game and then he did this, then, okay, the three-game suspension is warranted. I get it. But to automatically go to three games when this guy has never been suspended in his career, has he been fined? Yes, he's been fined for unnecessary roughness or late hits. Has he been fined? Yes. But to automatically go, because you're setting a precedent, which you haven't set before. Like, typically it's fine, suspension. And then if you do it again, another suspension, which tallies more games. Now, if you want to do this and say, well, listen, he doesn't come back, and you got to explain it. If he doesn't come back until Lawrence clears protocol, then okay, do that. And it may take a game or two. But don't just automatically, for a guy that hasn't been suspended at all, automatically level three games. And it wasn't because of the hit that you're leveling three games. I want everybody to read the whole letter that John Runyon sent to
him. You know what we'll do?
Yeah.
We will look at that letter more than the passage that I read. We'll do that next, but we'll get your thoughts on former Tennessee Titans linebacker Azeez Al-Shaair suspended three games for a hit that concussed Trevor Lawrence last week. 615-737-1025. Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025-1063. The game. D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 1025-1063. The game. Programming note, normally we have Clark Lee on Tuesdays at around this time. He won't be joining us this week. I'm sure we'll get him again before Vanderbilt plays its bowl game, because Vanderbilt, despite losing a tough game to Tennessee over the weekend, is indeed going bowling. So,
eligible.
So congratulations to Clark Lee and Vanderbilt mm-hmm. on that. We look forward to talking to him soon. But we're talking Azeez Al-Shaair, suspended three games by the NFL for his hit on Trevor Lawrence. And Derek, you mentioned the letter that John Runyon sent mm-hmm. to Azeez Al-Shaair about his suspension. And there was a passage that you wanted us, because we read the passage about the lack of sportsmanship, mm-hmm. but there was a passage right before that you wanted us to look at. And this is the passage you're referring to. Quote, "After the illegal hit, you proceeded to engage in a brawl, which you escalated when you pulled an opponent down to the ground by his face mask. After the referee announced that you were disqualified for the hit and your unsportsmanlike acts, you removed your helmet and re-engaged with your opponent while walking down and across the field, which started another physical confrontation near the end zone."
Okay. Unless I didn't see after he pulled his helmet off, this is because ultimately I think this is why they fined him three games, not necessarily for the hit, because I think if it would have just been a hit, it would have been a one-game suspension because of the other fines that he's gotten for unnecessary roughness. It would have been a one-game suspension. But in that whole process, see, as we tell our kids, two wrongs don't make a right, but sometimes we forget that when it comes to adults. You know, it's, we try to justify whatever decision we're going to make. And I think his justification, John Runyon, was, well, he started a melee. Well, let's sort of unpack this. I'm going to give you, because I watched all of it up until the point Aziz took off his helmet and started, you know, talking back. He didn't engage with the Philadelphia player. The Philadelphia player.
The Jacksonville player.
The Jacksonville player could have easily just walked away when Aziz took off his helmet and started yapping. And Aziz player, one of his Houston players, came and they grabbed him. They were in between him and the other guy. The other guy could have just walked away. Everything. He had been suspended. He had been ejected. Everything. The other guy could have walked away. But the other guy engaged as well. They didn't engage physically. They engaged verbally. There was no physical altercation. There was a verbal altercation. So please, Runyon, when you say that, say it was a verbal altercation, not a physical altercation, because you're misleading people so that your narrative can be fit why you suspended him. He didn't re-engage with him. He took off his helmet, and they started arguing back and forth. Then he ended up leaving the field. But, okay, he hit Lawrence. Bad play. Fine him. Suspended for a game. Then his player comes in, Lawrence's player, which, okay, I get it. I understand it doesn't make it right, but I get you trying to
You're defending your teammate. Yeah.
So his player comes up, and Aziz doesn't see him, and he gives him a shove to the back of the head into the ground. Then he shoves him again. And Aziz is trying to get up, and everybody's coming at him. So what is he supposed to do? He's protecting himself. I would have did the same damn thing. I'd have protected myself too. And if that meant grabbing someone's helmet to protect myself, I would have done that. But he didn't start like necessarily. I know the act of hitting Lawrence started the pushing. But then after that, if you're going to then put the onus on Aziz to sort of be able to turn that light switch off, then you should put the onus on the Jacksonville players to be able to shut their light switch off as well. Because after he hit Lawrence, I understand the tight end coming in and mushing him to the ground twice, but then everybody else from the Jaguars come over as well. So he's supposed to just sit there and get mushed to the ground and not say anything. He's protecting himself. So that part to me could have been taken out. If you're going to suspend him, suspend him for the hit. That doesn't look like what you did. Because if you just suspended him for the hit, that letter wouldn't have been that long. You would have just went directly to the second part of what you said. Like, what? Even though I don't agree with all of it, but you could have just went to that and said, this is the reason why we're suspending him a game. But you didn't. You went straight to the other stuff first, which tells me you suspended him really for that and not necessarily the hit, which is hypocritical.
Shoal is on our phone line, driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com. Shoal, thank you for waiting. Please go ahead.
Yes, you know, I'm sick with all these quarterbacks running. They're not supposed to run. Look, Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen, who are the quarterbacks that love to run? Okay.
Lamar Jackson.
Lamar Jackson, okay. Here is the problem. Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen, they run. They're about to go out. And then they run, they tiptoe. And then, you know, defender pull off. Now they're back in the field, and they won the game because of a field goal. He ran like a 31-yard line. So quarterback not supposed to run. I think Ray Ryan said something. Instead of them sliding, how about them diving? Because the defender is coming. It's up in the air. And you sliding, your hit is up. And they're coming. Now they already launched, try to tackle you. And you're going to meet in the middle. So who do you blame there when they already, you know, in the air? Maybe use his elbow, something different. Even though he did not, some people, they try to dive and they injured themselves. I don't remember the guy tried to avoid landing on a quarterback. Why are they treated special than other players? They all make money. They all special people. And we watch all of them. When I watch the game, I want to see the good game. And all these tag attack. This quarterback is not important than other quarterback. This team is punishing more. All officiating, the flag call, the game become. I used to be a big fan of NBA. I don't watch it anymore because of hand check. It's a physical game. Let them play. Treat them like other players. I'm so tired. This quarterback, at any moment they fake the ball should be there right there. Just like college.
Joel, thank you for the call. Thank you for the call. Ron on our text line has a similar point, Derek. Ron says about Shaiir, he was wrong for the hit, but some responsibility has to go on the quarterback. He has to know that trying to go for that one more yard can get you hurt. Defenders don't want you to have that one more yard. Quarterbacks need to know when they're running to get down as soon as a defender is about 5 yards from them, but going for that extra yard could get you hurt. Not defending the guy, just saying some responsibility should go on the quarterback. But look, the quarterbacks are going to be extra protected. I mean, we look at some of the roughing the passer calls in the NFL, and if you breathe on the quarterback wrong, there goes the flag.
Yeah.
So in that situation, I mean, it's a high-speed collision. I understand what Scholl is saying. You know, it comes down to split second, depending on when Shaiir launches himself, when Lawrence slides. It's just the timing of it. But quarterbacks, rightly or wrongly, are going to be extra protected by the NFL.
Yeah, they are, and I don't expect it to be changed. But listen, I think Scholl was right with one of his points, just like, you know, Rex Ryan was right when he said it too. And I heard a few players say it today. I think we put so much of the responsibility on the defensive player to avoid the offensive player that we put the defensive player at a disadvantage right away. There should be a rule that if you are going toward out of bounds and you look like you're going toward out of bounds and you're angling toward out of bounds and you decide to come back in, no, you're out of bounds. There's no trying to trick the defender, because that's what these quarterbacks are doing, and it's smart. You're working with the rules. It's like, okay, if I could get – the minute I'm going out of bounds, typically what do guys do? They pull up. And then some quarterbacks try to get that extra yard or two. I saw on a game, I think it was this week or last week, a guy was running out of bounds. Quarterback was running out of bounds. The guy let up. It was clear that the quarterback was trying to run out of bounds. The guy let up. The quarterback turned it up and got an extra 2 yards and then ran out. I'm looking at the defense player like, why didn't you tackle him? And then I had to rewind and was like, oh, that's why. Because he has to make a decision, a split second decision, to decide whether I'm going to hit this quarterback or I'm going to go, or I'm going to let the quarterback run. And a lot of times they rather pull up and the quarterback gets an extra 2 yards than to try to take that hit, which would probably be a legal hit, but because he's so close out of bounds, depending on who the quarterback is, they're going to throw the flag. So I think they have to really look at these rules about the sliding and the going out of bounds when it comes to quarterback. There has to be a point where if you give the indication that you're going down, that's where we're marking you at. Because we don't want to get to a point where you start to fake like you're going down and then you keep running. That happened a few years ago where a guy acted as if he was sliding and the defensive guy pulled up and the guy just kept running. I think it happened in a college game a few years ago. And then we look at the defensive player like, why didn't you make the tackle? Well, because, hell, if it looks like he's sliding, I'm about to make the tackle. I got to pull up, because if I hit him, they're going to throw a flag on me. It happened to Umanure some years ago with Vince Young. When the whole thing with protecting the quarterback was really at his height. He had the quarterback wrapped up. He had Vince Young wrapped up and was expecting the ref to blow the whistle, because I got him. I don't want to slam him down. I don't want to do all this because they're going to call a rough in the passing. What did he do? After about a couple of seconds, he let him go. And Vince ended up running for a touchdown. See, stuff like that. Like, you can't. They got to find a way to be able to legislate these things without putting the defensive player at a disadvantage. That's all I'm saying. But I understand they got to protect their quarterbacks, and I'm all about protecting the player, but there has to be a point where we say, listen, quarterback, you some of this onus has to go on you. You got to dive. Like, you either got to dive or you got to slide. And I'm with a lot of people now. Sliding may be more detrimental to you than diving forward. Because when you slide, you're giving up your head. You're giving up everything. Even if I hit you in the chest, your back of your head is still going to hit the canvas.
But if you're diving, you're leading with your head.
No. If I'm diving or if I'm diving forward, I'm not like diving in the air. I'm diving down.
Okay.
Like down and out of the way. I'm not sliding because when I slide, I'm more likely, if I'm a defender, to hit you up high if I do hit you. Even if I don't mean to hit you high, I'm still going to hit you high. And you might end up having a concussion. Not because I hit you, but because your head hit the canvas.
A couple of texters point out Kenny Pickett when he was at Pitt.
I think that was the play, yes. Kenny Pickett.
Did a
yes.
fake slide in the ACC championship game.
He ended up running for a touchdown. I believe
it was a 58-yard touchdown. So according to a memo from NCAA National Coordinator of Officials Steve Shaw, referees should interpret a fake slide as a player surrendering himself.
And that's the way the NFL should look at it.
And the play, the person said, quote, anytime a ball carrier begins, simulates, or fakes a feet-first slide, the ball should be declared dead by the on-field officials at that point. The intent of the rule is player safety, and the objective is to give a ball carrier an option to end the play by sliding feet first, and to avoid contact. To allow the ball carrier to fake a slide would compromise the defense that is being instructed to let up when the ball carrier slides feet first.
Exactly. And I wonder if the NFL has such rule. If they do, they need to enforce it more on the out of bounds as well, not just the slide. If they do have that rule, they need to enforce it. If they don't have that rule, they need to implement it. Again, I'm not saying it's all the quarterback's fault because they have to protect the quarterback. That's what put butts in the stands. That's why sponsors come out and they sponsor your games. That's why ESPN, that's why the NFL has these huge contracts. Not because a receiver or a defensive player. It's all about the quarterbacks. That's why they put these rules in to protect them. Well, if that's the case, you got to understand, you got to let these quarterbacks know. If you simulate you're going out of bounds, if you're angling for that out of bounds and everybody in the building knows it, and then all of a sudden, because the defensive player lets up, you try to get an extra 2 yards. No. We're going to put you back right where you started to go out of bounds, or we're going to put you right where you started that fake slide.
615-737-1025. By the way, Alex from Franklin, and I think this is a good way to wrap this up. Alex from Franklin says, Adam and Derek, we can all agree that Rand Carthon's best move this season was letting Aziz Alshaier walk. Thank God this isn't the Titans issue. I can only imagine where that would rank.
If this would have happened in a Titans uniform?
Yes.
Oh, goodness.
Oh, boy. Fortunately, we don't have to worry about that. 615-737-1025. We'll wrap up the show next. Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025-1063. The game. D. Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 1025-1063. The game. Derek Mason and Adam Vingan here with you. Stillman and Company coming up next. A reminder, Barry Trotz, Predators general manager, will join Jared for his normal Tuesday sit down at 5:00. The Predators are back in action tomorrow night on the road at the Toronto Maple Leafs. And although we did start the show with this, Derek, we did receive a couple of texts to this effect. For those of you that are interested in watching the Hallmark movie that I made Derek watch over the weekend, it's called Holiday Touchdown: A Chiefs Love Story. It's on the Hallmark channel. So if you're interested in watching it, that's the name of the program. Holiday Touchdown: A Chiefs Love Story. So it's Tuesday, college football playoff rankings. That's become the norm around here on Tuesday. We talk about that. It's championship week in college football. And here's one thing that I really love about this 12-team playoff, Derek. Mm-hmm. As you know, I'm a big college basketball fan. And one of the best parts about the NCAA tournament in the lead-up to the NCAA tournament, the March Madness tournament, is bid stealing. So we all think of, you know, that plucky mid-major team. They're going to get their, you know, they're expected.
Go Blue Raiders.
They're expected, like the Blue Raiders, they're expected, you know, to win their conference tournament, get that automatic bid, but they lose. But they still have a good enough resume to get in. So another team wins the conference tournament, gets the automatic bid, and they steal a bid from another at-large team. That's my favorite part of championship week in college basketball. And I feel like we can get that here in college football. And I'm looking at one team in particular as the ultimate bid stealer. And that's Clemson. Clemson is in the ACC title game against SMU after Miami lost to Syracuse, which you predicted in Silly Underdog Picks. Yes. Congratulations. My favorite part about that game was, I believe it was Don Davenport was interviewing the Syracuse coach. And at the end of the at the end of the interview, he said, "Dabo, much love. I got you in, baby."
He did Dabo a favor.
Yes. So, the coach's name is escaping me, but I did think that was funny. He did shout out Dabo Sweeney for getting him into the ACC
title
game. Is Pat
Narduzzi still? No, Pat's at
that's Pittsburgh,
Pitt.
Right?
Yeah, he's at Pitt.
So it's Clemson and SMU in the ACC title game. And I really do think it comes down to, look, if SMU beats Clemson, I think it's pretty simple. SMU gets in, they get the automatic bid by winning the ACC. Clemson at that point would be a four-loss team. I think they're out. I think it's a win-and-in situation for Clemson. You win, you get the automatic bid. You lose, you're out, because they would be a four-loss team. So let's just say Clemson wins. They pull off the upset. SMU at this point is a 2.5-point favorite, so it wouldn't be a gigantic upset. But let's say Clemson pulls off the upset. I still think SMU gets in. Depending on the outcome of the game, if Clemson blows the doors off of SMU, maybe that changes things. But I think if Clemson wins and it's close, I think SMU gets in, which means somebody that might want to get into the college football playoff might not get in, and I think that team might be Alabama.
Well, Alabama's going to need, a lot to get in. Alabama's, to me, is not one of the top 12 teams this year. They're just not. As much as I, still have this, love affair with Alabama because of Nick Saban, even though he's not there, I just don't believe, after watching them all season, I just don't believe they're one of the top 12 teams in the country. Now, if Clemson ends up winning, they end up going in because they are the winner of the ACC, and they're, it'd be 10-3?
They'll be 10-3 if they
SMU
win.
SMU will be, 9-2?
Let's take a look. SMU, if they were to lose, they would be 11-2.
So you figure, even if SMU loses,
I think they're in.
They're more than
regardless of the outcome.
In. Clemson is the team that has to win.
They have to win.
So if Clemson doesn't win, who then sort of takes their spot? Because right now you figure you have two ACC teams in if Clemson wins. You got SMU and you got Clemson.
Does Miami find a way to get back in if Clemson wins? If Clemson loses.
If Clemson loses?
Yeah.
But who would they – who would they jump over to get in? That's the thing.
Yeah, that's a good question. So I'm looking at the projections here, the projected top 25 on The Athletic. They have Clemson at number 19 right now. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the cutoff is 12. But that's a good question. I don't know. Part of me thinks that if Clemson wins, it might be as simple if Clemson wins, SMU also gets in as well. I'm wondering what the first team out is going to be. And I still think it will be Alabama, because they do have some marquee wins on their on their resume, despite being a three-loss team.
But if you watch Alabama, it's from what I've seen of
– and Alabama has played a much tougher schedule than SMU.
They played a tougher
schedule.
But Alabama is it. Now, we are comparing Alabama – to previous Alabama teams, and maybe that's not fair, but they just don't look like one of the top 10 or 12 teams in the country this year. They just don't. So do you put them in because of the mystique of Alabama? Is the residue of Nick Saban still so much there that even after three losses, you still put them in? I'm not sure. Milroe isn't playing well. Doesn't look good. His stock is going down. The defense hasn't looked, Alabama-ish. they just don't, they're not the same team. So if they do get in, I think it's just because of the residue of Nick Saban. It's still being there.
Right. They're a marquee franchise, so to speak. Yeah. Everybody knows the name Alabama. So they may get more benefit of the doubt because they're Alabama. Maybe if SMU does lose, although they'll be an 11-2 team versus an Alabama team, which is 9-3, Alabama did play a tougher schedule. They are Alabama. So maybe SMU does get.
What about South Carolina? Or
yeah, so that is
Ole
the
Miss
one.
Or Ole Miss.
I think Ole Miss is out. Ole Miss
I think Ole Miss
bad,
is
yeah,
out.
That loss against Kentucky,
that
that's
loss,
a bad
yeah,
loss.
That
yeah,
loss
that's
to Kentucky
bad loss
is bad.
But they did beat Georgia, who's playing for the.
But Georgia's. I get it, but that loss to Kentucky still
no, no,
a bad
agree,
loss.
Agree, agree.
It's still a bad loss. That was the one they had to have. That
actually, that loss to Florida was really bad too.
Yeah, you're right. But Florida ends up being a good team.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's not as bad. But Kentucky, that was bad. You should beat Kentucky. I'm looking at it like, okay, Penn State. That's the team. Do Penn State have to win the Big Ten title to get into the playoffs? Could they lose, considering what their schedule has been, and they haven't beat a top 25 team, and if they lose to Oregon, they will be undefeated, meaning they will be winless against top 25 teams or top 20 teams. Do you still put them in?
I mean, I think they're – I feel like they're safe. I do feel like they're safe.
Because it's like we got to put four teams in the Big Ten?
Yeah.
From the Big Ten, and you got to get four teams from the SEC?
Maybe. Yeah. It look, it's tough, and I'm glad we're getting to championship week at this point because, as Willie likes to talk about, until we play those championship games, we don't really know how all of this is going to shake out, and we'll finally have our answers after this weekend.
But the one team I think that is like, whew, thank goodness, is Indiana.
Yes.
Indiana's like, thank goodness we don't have to play in the Big Ten championship game. Because if they get blown out by Oregon, they're not making it. With two losses, they're not making it.
Yeah, so this is what Lane Kiffin was talking about with the
absolutely.
SEC, except he didn't get a chance to make it to the SEC title game because he lost to Florida.
Exactly.
But I do want to touch on one thing quickly. I mean, I'm not looking forward to Chris Sanders gloating on Thursday, but he did pick Michigan to upset Ohio State. And I've seen that. I believe even our dear friend Caroline Fenton said that if Ryan Day is going to keep his job at Ohio State, he has to win the national title. Do you think it's that cut and dry that the only way Ryan Day will survive after losing again to Michigan is if he rebounds by winning the national title?
I tell you what he can't do is lose in the first round.
That's
what
for sure.
He can't do. Now, anything beyond that, I think if he gets to the title game, I think they keep him. Unless the noise starts to get so loud, and we all know the name that will come up, Mike Vrabel. Unless the noise starts to get that loud in Columbus that they just feel they got to make a change, I don't think they make the change unless he loses in the first round. If he gets past the first round, I think, okay, all bets are off. I think his seat is safe. But if he loses in the first round, I think they're going to be looking to go another direction.
So based on the projections by Heather Dinich at ESPN.com, Ohio State is eighth. They would host Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
They would host Tennessee in the first round in Columbus, and the winner of that game would play Oregon. And Oregon and Ohio State played a good game earlier this season.
Well, unless UT gets healthy very quickly, that's not going to be a good game for them because they are a beat-up team, especially at the wide receiver position.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens there. Look, I turned on the game a little bit late on Saturday, and when I saw it was 14-0 Vanderbilt, I had to do that thing where I rubbed my eyes extra hard to make sure. And look, I don't have the greatest vision, but I had to rub my eyes extra hard to make sure I was seeing what was actually happening. I know that Tennessee bounced back, but we talked about it. Like, Robbie Stanley, our resident Vols fan, he was nervous about it. I know a lot of Vols fans were nervous about that game. It certainly didn't start off the way they intended, but they did get the win. They did put themselves in position, you know, to make the college football playoff. But Vanderbilt did give him a scare early on.
And you
on.
Had to text Willie. Willie.
Yeah, you had to do it.
I texted Coach Willie and made sure I had a little anchor emoji in there as well. Now, Willie did not respond because we know Coach Willie. He's got tunnel vision. And look, I get it. Like, I'm one of those sports fans too, that even when things are going well, I'm like, how is this going? What's going
to
go
waiting
wrong?
Waiting for the shoe to drop.
What's going to go wrong? What's going to go wrong? So, but hopefully Willie doesn't blame that.
You do that to
on
your
me.
Duke Blue Devils?
Oh yeah.
Oh wow.
Oh yeah.
You have no faith in your
no,
team?
No, I do. But as I'm one of like I am one of those cynical sports fans where I'm just like, everything's going to get worse before it gets better. And by the way, ACC, SEC Challenge in college basketball these next 2 days, some good games. Duke and Auburn tomorrow. Looking forward to that one. But that'll do it for us today. An eventful day on our program, even though we were down a man. We'll be back tomorrow. Willie will join us for at least a portion of the show tomorrow, live from Toronto, where the Predators will face the Toronto Maple Leafs. A reminder, Barry Trotz with Jared Stillman at 5 o'clock, and Stillman and Company is coming up next on 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
Be love, love on your people. Have a wonderful, blessed, and safe Tuesday. Peace. One last call for alcohol, so finish your-